Hello, good people, and welcome to the Alchemy of Light broadcast. Our season of gratitude continues here on this lovely Saturday, the sixth day of the 11th lunation, October the 20th, 2012, in our Gregorian calendar. And I am so excited today. This is a celebration from coast to coast. We have two awesome guests today, two musicians. Our first guest is going to be from Massachusetts. Her name is Jennifer Avalon in our first hour. Then we will end up in Washington State with Anna Kate for our second hour. So we'll waste no further time. I am Jimmy O'Gran, your host, welcoming you. And now we will welcome the lovely Jennifer Avalon. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Jamil. Thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for being here. And I'm very inspired by your story for many particular aspects. You've chosen a unique route for cultivating your music. You have been a musician for many years. Would you say that you've been a musician pretty much from childhood? Was that just part of your reality from a very young age?
Very young age. I actually started playing piano at 3, just on my own, you know, before I took lessons. I played for about, till I was about 8, and then my mom said, you know, it's really time for you to have piano lessons, which I couldn't stand, because I was writing my own songs, and the piano teacher would want me to learn, you know, her pieces, so I learned those, and then she'd say, well, if you learn to play these, then I will teach you how to write down your own compositions. You know,
so you're already writing your own.
That was a good deal. That made sense to me.
Oh, so it actually worked.
Yeah, it did, because I didn't mind learning. I had to learn like classical pieces, you know, and then my reward was that she taught me how to, you know, write down my own compositions. So that worked fine. And she always smelled good. She always wore lovely perfume, you know, so it was a fine experience.
Interesting. That's fun. And then the writing down, you mean the translating into the little dots, right?
Right. Actually scoring the music.
Scoring music.
I learned how to do that. And I used to write poems, you know, so that was how my lyrics developed, because I wrote a lot of poetry. So it was just pretty natural, you know, most of my life. Just being involved in music. One of my grandfathers was a singer, and my singing actually came about by accident. That I didn't really know was going to become part of the whole thing, because I used to hire people to do demos of my songs. But what happened was, one time one of the singers couldn't make it. She made it, but she was in the studio and she couldn't sing the song for some reason. Something had happened, and she was upset about her boyfriend or something. So she couldn't sing the song. And one of the musicians said to me, you know, Jennifer, said, you played the song for us, and, you know, you taught us this song, and you were singing it, and it sounded fine. So they said, why don't you, you know, as the minutes are ticking away, because studios, you know, are very expensive by the hour. So I went up to the mic, I asked her, I said, do you want to just, you know, give me a try? She said, oh, please, please, sing the song. And so I went up, and that's when I found out that the tape liked my voice. I had no way of knowing that, you know, until that happened.
So, about what age were you around then?
Oh, gosh. I was in my 20s, I guess. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe late 20s when that happened, yeah.
And another thing that I really like in your evolution as a person and a musician is that you are a near-death experiencer, and you've shared with me offline that this was also a very powerful experience in your life, but also in your music as well. Would you like to talk about that a bit?
Sure. That happened when I was 17. And I was walking through some woods in California. I was like on a hike, and I guess I fell into a stream. I don't know exactly what happened, because between the time that I fell into the stream and then came back, I went somewhere, and I the only place I can think it was heaven. That's the closest word I could use, because I went like up into a sort of a misty tunnel, and it was sort of pinkish. I remember like this pink, sort of pink mist. And the next thing I knew, I was on clouds, and I felt tremendous peace. I remember thinking, this is incredible, this peace. I didn't know where I was at the time, but I felt peace. And then I remember thinking it was almost like a substance that I could touch. And I thought it felt like the substance was made of love. That was the other thing. And then I remember standing on clouds and looking out over the universe and realizing that there was a supreme intelligence. And that to me was God at that moment. And then there was a being standing next to me, and he started talking to me. And one of the things he said to me, which he said a number of things to me, but the one that I remember most, that stood out the most, was that he had me look down at Earth, and I saw a bunch of humans standing like perpendicular to the planet, and they had, in the middle of their chest, they had like a heart light. And he said to me, everybody has this heart light, but most people don't know it. And he said, it's very important that people learn that they have this. So I remember thinking about that. And I didn't know at the time, I wasn't raised with any religion. So years later, when I saw a picture of Jesus with that heart, you know, and the light coming out of the heart, I remember thinking, aha, that must be what he was talking about, that being from the other side. So, yeah, we all have a heart light. And that did influence, yeah, that definitely influenced my music. I wrote a number of songs from that experience, Third Planet from the Sun, Silver Blue, Technicolor, Still Point of the Turning World. I mean, most of my music, really, in a way, is influenced from that experience.
Yeah. I think at this point it might be nice to offer one of the songs, and then perhaps we can come back and go more in depth about how the universal connection and music and the muse have been an influence. Does that sound right?
Sure, that's fine. Yeah.
All right. Well, fantastic, because this is a celebration of music, and we want to bring your music to the good people. So this first song that we'll offer is The Third Planet from the Sun. And this is a song that was inspired by your near-death experience.
Yeah.
Correct. Okay. This is the one that... Is there anything particular or particularly unique about this particular song you'd like to share?
Not at the moment. Okay. I will after you hear it, I guess.
fair enough. Okay, so we will play this song and then come back and carry on.
Okay.
Mountains of love.
I am so glad you discovered your voice, Jennifer. That is just really beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, that one, when I say Starborn Survivors with Secrets to Share, I was referring to like that being that was standing next to me who showed me the heart light, you know. And then I think a lot of NDEers, we feel like we're survivors because, you know, we sort of left this place, went somewhere else, and came back. So, yeah.
How do you translate the left there and come back? But there's some part of you that is consistent, whatever part of you was there and is here. Mm-hmm. How do you translate that into our new reality in the respect of maintaining your personal dignity? Now, another way to ask the question would be, how would you define that part of you?
Oh, okay. You never really lose the connection. You come back, at least, I was shown like a silver cord. There's always a connection. We all have it.
Mm-hmm.
It partly comes through breathing. Like when we're alive, we have to have our breath to maintain life. Mm-hmm. So part of it's that connection, the breath, but we're all connected to everybody has their own interpretation. Some people think it's another dimension. Mm-hmm. Some people call it heaven. That's where we come from, which is this, my song Silver Blue. I talk about that's where we come from. And this is so temporary, this earthly existence. I never felt like I lost the connection when I came back. However, I think it's important for all of us to feel connected. Some people do it through religion. Some people do through what they would define as spirituality. Some people can do it through meditation. But I think it's really important for people to feel that connection and not feel alone, because we're not alone. Mm-hmm. And that's also why I said that in Third Planet from the Sun. Someone is watching, somebody cares. And ageless companions everywhere. Because I really believe that. Yeah.
Yeah, the near-death experience has so much to teach us about who we are beyond our material-based understanding of our bodies and our names and our bank accounts and our professional titles and all those things. And I feel like at this particular time in our evolution that the gifts of the near-death experiencers are priceless. It might just be my bias because I'm here at this time and this is my time to carry the light now, but it just never fails to amaze me what just that simple truth that we are all connected, that peace that it can bring to people in times of travail, it's astounding. You can't really measure that, you know?
You just said a key thing. You said we're all connected. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was over there, you know, and when I died, that was the other thing that I was shown, is how we are all connected. I remember that being actually saying that. We're all connected. And I could see it, you know, I could actually see it. That's the other thing, is that the colors over there are different. They're very bright, very crisp. Yeah. And I didn't give you that song for this show, but the song called Technicolor that I wrote deals with that. It's almost like a light's turned on, and I suddenly saw that everything was very crisp, which meant that it was more real in a sense than here. It's almost like here, there's like a veil over everything. It's almost like we're walking around like a sort of fog. But you're right. The interconnectivity is, if we really could see that and really knew, it would be almost in some ways painful, because if someone's hurting on the other side of the world, you know, and plenty of people are, and hurting here, it hurts all of us. So.
Yeah, I mean, it changes war immediately, right?
Mm-hmm. That's why I'm a hermit. That's why I'm a hermit. It's just easier. I don't have to pick up too much, you know. And I mean, I choose when I go out and come back, but I'm basically a hermit. There was a time when I did perform live. I did do that, like in Manhattan when I lived there. You can imagine what living in Manhattan was like for me.
Oh, geez.
And I did perform there. And then when the internet came along, I decided to go that way. So, and that's been very good to me. So.
And you just set up your website and started doing internet promotion. And tell us a little bit about how you set that up and what the listeners, let's tell the listeners about your website now.
Oh, it's www.jenniferavalon.net. And it's very important that it's .net, because somebody took jenniferavalon.com and they were a porn star. And I think it's because, like, I got so many hits, you know, that they decided to take my name, and then they got .com. Yeah, I should have bought .com, but I didn't think about it at the time. So, yeah, so .net, I'm jenniferavalon.net. Yeah.
Too much. And that's JenniferAvalon.net.
Yes.
And when they go to your site, you offer your music and you have several essays and things, and they're all gratis. They're all complimentary, correct?
Oh, yes. I'm up to almost 500 essays now. And then I'm on my 11th album. So 11th CD. They're also, you can buy them on Amazon. You know, if people feel they want to, you know, there's downloads that they can buy, like as singles, or they can buy the whole album. But yes, I offer for free at my website. That also was because, well, number one, there's so much file sharing now. When I first started out, there wasn't. So I was able to make a little money, you know, in the beginning and, you know, sock some away, thank God. But it's very hard for, you know, artists, musicians, unless you go out live. It's because of all the, you know, file sharing. So, if you, you know, it's best to perform live if you can. I had the opportunity to build up a huge audience, and that was, I'm very grateful for that. So I have people who do buy, and I also got involved with, like, sometimes museum installations use my music, and sometimes, you know, independent films, and then, like, a music supervising company contacted me, so they promote the stuff also. But that took, I mean, it takes years. You know, it takes years, and it also takes a lot of patience, because, but one thing I can say, I would say to a musician now, don't ever give away your publishing, don't ever sell your publishing to a publisher, own your own publishing, which I do. So I did that from day one. I had publishers trying to get my publishing, and I just said no, because I had read enough, you know, I'd heard enough stories, and I knew not to give that up. So, because that's where you make your money. So.
That's very important. I think you said something else that's really important for up-and-coming musicians, and that is the importance of patience and stamina, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'll have go ahead.
Don't give up your day job. I mean, I've worked as a waitress. I worked at a health food store. I was an executive secretary. I mean, things like that, because you have to be able to support yourself, you know? Especially, I mean, now with all the file sharing and everything, it's really important to make sure you have something you can rely on, you know, besides the music. Because you shouldn't ever have to compromise your music, you know, I don't think.
No, and it's an interesting to plug this into the near-death experience lessons of all being connected, of all being one ultimately. Mm-hmm. And then we come into this world where separation and competition and all these things have been to this point the dominant reality. And I do believe that's shifting. I think it kind of has to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, at a certain point, it's just not supporting anybody and then it collapses. Mm-hmm. I think that's just natural. Mm-hmm. So. I kind of rely on natural laws. I mean, I'm kind of dependent on the universe at this point.
Yeah, well, that's good. The universe is very wise. That's for sure.
Well, how do you see it? Do you have in your near-death experience that had such a great deal of inspiration for you musically? Has it had likewise an inspiration for you and how you grounded and integrated some of these lessons and some of this knowledge in the way you've done your music business?
Well, one thing is giving away the music for free because, and I live very modestly. Some members of my family were more materialistic, shall we say. Mm-hmm. Okay. And jewelry and things mattered to them. And I really, especially after the near-death experience, I couldn't care less. I could not care less. I don't care about diamonds. I don't care about that stuff. And so it's, in a way, afforded me to live the way I want because I don't have to have that much. You know what I mean?
I do.
So, you know, so, and I think the near-death experience had a lot to do with that. I realized that there's so many other things that matter aside from materialism. It's, you know, and in the end, you know, what we take with us really is, it's the love that we have inside of us. It's the love that we share. It's also the love we let in. That's important too. The love that we receive.
That's a big one.
That's a big one.
Receiving.
Just as important as loving, you know, as giving love and receiving.
Well, how would you, from your experience in the translation, again, with giving and receiving, you know, I have moments where I get they're exactly the same, but then it seems that they become different again. Do you have any light on that?
You mean where you feel like you're loving more than the other person or something like that, or vice versa?
No, giving and receiving. Mm-hmm. Being the same, giving love and receiving love being exactly the same. And so therefore, receiving love is actually key to giving love.
That's true. Yes. Okay. I hear you. I hear what you're saying. That's
so
true.
Yes, if one part of the mechanism is blocked, the whole thing is moving slower, shall we say, because ultimately, you know, that's kind of the juice of life. You must have something like that going on. But the flow seems to be slowed down when receiving is blocked. So giving and receiving have to work absolutely in tandem somehow, which ultimately means that they're the same on some level. Does that make any sense?
Yes, that's right. Like, yes, it's like infinity. It's just an endless cycle. That's true. That is true. I agree.
Did anything like that become apparent in the near-death experience and the experience of how the human wanting to show the human that that love works or how love works?
I'd say, the after effects of the near-death experience involve that. Like, it's one thing is to have the near-death experience, and then it's what happens afterwards. So part of that is involved. Very often you're given a spirit guide, and that is, I think, for a lot of NDEers, that's part of the experience. We all have them. We all have guides. Some of us are tuned in. You know, we all have them. Most of us as little kids know we have them, and then we forget. The other thing that I find interesting, and I don't know if this is the case with other NDEers, but I think it is for some, the whole aspect of other beings, like I bought a log cabin at one point in Kent Cliffs, New York, upstate New York, not knowing that that was a place that they call a vortex. And also there was a tremendous amount of like UFO activity there, and I didn't know it, and at least consciously didn't know it. And when I moved there, I had an experience where, you know, do you want me to talk about this or not?
Yeah, please.
Okay.
Very important for you. I think this is very important to share.
Okay. I was, at the time, my bedroom was up in a loft in that house, and I had my three little doggies. I have three Shih Tzus, and they were sleeping in my bed with me. And I remember I woke up around 2 in the morning, and I had one of those digital clocks. So I remember looking at the clock because I felt paralyzed, and I couldn't move. And I could move my eyes, but I couldn't move my body. And I'll never forget, it said 2 o'clock in the morning. And I felt that there were three, like, these beings in my bedroom. And I couldn't really see them because it was dark, but they looked kind of tall and thin, I remember. And I remember thinking, why aren't my dogs barking? Because they're, you know, Shih Tzus are great. I mean, they're little, they're, like, harmless, but they can really bark. They were quiet. And I remember thinking the thought, why aren't my dogs barking? And I heard a voice from one of those tall beings say, because we're not human. And I remember thinking, oh, okay. oh, fine, okay. I mean, here I am. You know, it's 2 in the morning. I'm paralyzed. And they've got these three spindly, you know, sort of spindly tall things standing there. And the next thing I knew, I was being... I don't know how they got me out of the room. That I don't remember. I just know I was floating up. And then I was floating towards this huge, and it was huge, like a, I guess it was a spacecraft. I mean, it was so big. At the time, I thought it was because I thought it must be that this is really big. I found out, and it had like these big headlights on it, and I got really close to it, and I remember thinking, Shea Stadium. I remember thinking that's the only thing I could relate to, because I had been to baseball games at Shea Stadium, and it kind of looked like the outside of the stadium. It was that big. I found out later that a number, I mean, hundreds of people have seen this craft from the ground, you know, and they've seen it way up in the sky, and it's like a boomerang shape. So that's why I couldn't see the whole thing, because it actually was just a boomerang. So even if I'd been taken down to the other side, you know, I wouldn't have seen the headlights. So, the next thing I remember is screaming and saying, take me back. I love Earth, warts and all. I never forget saying warts and all. And I remember thinking, why did I say that? The next time I was back in my bed. So I don't know. There was some time loss, so I don't know, time lapse or whatever you call it. But I have a theory about that when you've had an NDE, or maybe even people that have had out-of-body experiences, I don't know, because I didn't have that, you know. But I think that maybe when a person has an NDE, it's kind of like the Foreign Service hires a lot of missionaries, because they have to learn how to speak different languages, and they have to learn about other cultures. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of Mormons, for instance, who get hired to go overseas in the Foreign Service because they have learned to speak other languages and learned about other cultures. And I think that maybe people who've had the NDEs, because they've literally been somewhere else and have accepted that to a degree, a different dimension, and have, you know, when you talk to these people in the white robes, they speak through their minds. They don't speak, you know, it's thought to thought. So I think maybe ETs, or whatever you want to call them, they find us easier to contact because we're more open. That's the only thing I can figure.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, did you actually go on the craft, or you just got close to it and said, that's it, guys, take me back?
I don't know. I don't think I went on it. If I did, I don't have a memory of it. Mm-hmm. I do remember the last thing I remember saying, I want to go back, and... I said I love Earth, warts and all, and that's. But I have written my latest song, which will come up on my next album. It's going to come out in January. It's called Touché, and it's the first time I've really talked about that experience. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, share with me if you would, if you feel comfortable, the experience when you were in the NDE, the part of you that left and met the beings. And then the experience from being with the tall beings that came, was there a similarity? Do you suppose they might have been the same or related, or were they completely different? And
okay. The near-death experience is, for me, was very different from the, alien experience.
Extraterrestrial being connection.
Yeah, they like to be called beings. I remember them telling me that. They don't like being called aliens. They want to be called beings. And I can understand that. Alien sounds kind of strange and scary. Mm-hmm. They're not. My experience was they were not scary, and that they are working maybe hand in hand with angels or the other beings to help mankind, to help us, because we're kind of a mess, you know, and they're not here to hurt anybody, and just like angels, you know, angels and aliens, I think they are beings. I think they all work together. They really do. And that's what I believe. No, they're not here to hurt us. And I get very upset when I see movies that always portray the aliens or beings as, you know, out to take over the world or something. That's the last thing. Believe me, they would have done it by now. I mean, they're so intelligent. But, I mean, they can get here. We can't even get to where they live. They can get here, you know, in a flash. So, that's kind of intelligence. True intelligence equals love. True intelligence equals love. Mm. And they're not here to hurt us.
Mm.
I just know that. Mm. And I also know that any gifts you get from the NDE are to be used for the good. Absolutely to be used for the good of mankind. That's the way it is. Mm. So, and anything that isn't for the good, you know, stay away from. You know.
Yeah, that's a long conversation too, and the exploration of what we call good and bad. But ultimately, it's all a lesson to be learned, right? It's all an experience to have, and a navigation of soul, if you will, that the guides us along and shows us new things and enhances our experience. And it's on some level, it's not bad. At some level, it's just simply the chosen path of humanity. In my opinion, it's, you know, we're all in this together, and we've all co-created it on some level. Share with us, please, a little bit about home. You know, this is another thing I think that's really important now because of our reality shifting. We are in a time where the systems that we've all known are shifting. They're collapsing. They're morphing. They're transmuting. They're transforming. You know, whatever word works for you, to whatever degree you're on that trajectory, there's no way of escaping the transformation that the planet itself is a part of right now. And a lot of depression is is very common in times like this as well.
Depression, you said?
Yeah, the common mind often will feel depressed and feel disconnected in times of change because the reliance on those old systems is very profound, you know? And I hear constantly, you know, this longing for home, this idea, you know, well, I just want to go home. I just want to leave here, leave this planet, leave this. So what is home? What do you suppose that is? Where's there a better place to go? Is there a better place to go?
Home is when you're done reincarnating. That's a whole other topic, but I believe that we reincarnate until we can go back home. Home, this isn't home, far as I'm concerned, living on Earth, but it's extremely important to be here. It's part of learning. It's part of being able to go home. And I get alarmed when some people say, "Oh, you know, I want to die. I want to have an NDE. You know, I want to die. I just want to." That's not. In fact, the NDE makes you want to live even more because you realize that it's a gift to be here. It may not feel like it. A lot of times it doesn't feel like it, but this is a gift. It's a real gift. And there's so much we can do here because we have bodies. Once you're over there, you don't have a body. So, you know, and you still have jobs. I mean, when people think that we die and that's it and there's no more work to do, no way. No way. There's a lot of work to do there. But you have to do it without a body. And some things are important to get across for humanity with a body. It'll be more. It's more powerfully done when you have a body. So, it's a gift. All of us, and we all, you know, chose to be here. So, you know, I know it doesn't feel like it a lot of times. You know, when I watch the evening news, and I could scream. But it's still a gift.
Yeah, throw away your TV. That'll solve that.
I'm like a news junkie. Oh gosh, and I really shouldn't, but I do. I follow things, but it's, you know, you need a timeout sometimes.
Well, you were sharing about the near-death experience, the beings were talking to you about where we're from. So that's different, or that's just part of
home? Oh, that's different. Oh, the being. Oh, huh. Okay, that kind of, I guess they call that an abduction, right? Abduction experience is different.
No, it
felt different. Oh.
No, I'm talking about the near-death experience when you were talking about those beings that had mentioned something about where we're from, something about the connection to, maybe I misunderstood, that Silver Blue is connected to?
Oh, that song, yes. That song I wrote about my is also about the near-death experience. Yeah, that one I say, in the first verse I say, "Take my hand, we'll wander to the land of Silver Blue. Where we land is really up to time and me and you." And what I meant by that is that, you know, there's always somebody that holds out a hand when you cross over. You're not alone, and I'm sorry, what was your question?
Well, I was just inquiring about this place that we call home, but I think we're just cruising along here. It's all good. Now, the conversation for our exploration of the after effects, the impact of this, and being a hermit. This is really interesting because, obviously, in my opinion, you're very sensitive, and these experiences make you more sensitive across the board. I've heard that consistently. And and then, of course, as you're mentioning, watching the news and the conflict that creates from that awareness of a universal connection. And how do you see us moving into this love reality as a species?
Yes, first of all, it's I think it's one way for the one way I do it. Everybody, I'm sure, has their own way, but it's very important to me that I feel very grounded, and that I face that there's real bad people out there, you know, and in knowing that, that's where I am able then to tap into some of the lessons that I learned on the other side, some of the still ongoing contact that I have, and I try in my music to spread the other, spread the opposite of bad intentions, you know. There's a lot of bad intentions in the world, and I try to spread good intentions, you know what I mean? It's a way of fighting back, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fighting back, but the first thing is to face that it's that there is, you know, bad stuff going on out there, and you know, that's to me the first thing to face. Then you can fight it. Then I'm able to fight it. But like I'll watch the news and I'll be horrified and everything, and I'll say, okay, I know, you know, this is what we're up against. We're all up against this. And, you know, that somehow then it morphs, you know, when I go back into the studio, I'm able to sort of come out the other side and try to push back against that.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Do you have a studio at your house so you are to just move into your little world?
Oh, yes. You know, I started out, when I first started out, I had to go to studios. But then I built my own studio in the house. So, yep.
Uh-huh. Really a hermit.
No, I'm not kidding.
That was not an understatement. We were lucky you were willing to come out for a radio program.
Yes.
Thank you.
This is only the second interview I've ever given, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I have a huge following, but it's through, you know, it's just through the internet, about 11 million and or more. But the only other interview I gave was when I lived in the Hudson Valley. I sang a song for at a football game, and after that they interviewed me, and it was about my Father's Day, so it was a song that I'd written for my father called My Father. Yeah.
Well, that's really awesome. I mean, in a way, that is just so exemplary of what happens when you make up your mind to do your soul's work. You know, you were steadfast in your commitment and just allowed things to work in a way that permitted you the space and enhanced your creativity and allowed you to express your music. It's prolific, and your writing is prolific, and it is very inspired and very sensitive. It's a very nice, soothing. Your songs, I find all very soothing. So I think you're effective in your mission to counteract some of the harder stuff. I mean, Jennifer, are you going to write a song for Mitt Romney and for Obama?
No.
No.
Oh no. Oh gosh. I just can't wait for this election to be over. You know what I mean? I knew this year would be tough with that. You know, all the ads and everything. You know, I just want it over already. And then we just all get on with our lives, no matter who wins, right? We just get on with our lives.
Yeah, well, that getting on and facing all the challenges, you know, it seems like it's a lot of facing up is due here. So, bless your heart. Bless your heart. Well, we're blowing through this hour at an incredible light speed here. Perhaps we should take time for one more song and then come back and wrap it up. How does that sound?
Okay, sure.
Go ahead.
Oh, which song were you thinking of?
I was going to ask you, which one, the Still Point or Silver Blue?
Well, we talked about Silver Blue, so maybe that one.
Okay. Oh, all right, then. So, Doug, my friend in the back, would you please, he's already. Here we go.
Okay.
This is Silver Blue.
Oh,
That was Jennifer Avalon and Silver Blue. And Jennifer Avalon is still with us here. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi.
Thank you. You know, that was interesting. It does a lot of play on time, I noticed. And the time reality, that particular line, history shows us there's nothing to lose or gain. And can you share a little bit about how that grounds? What were you seeing then?
Oh, when I said that nothing to lose, from the other side, you look back, you say there's nothing to lose or to gain. Yeah, it's that in the end, it's really just, it's how much love you gave, how much love you let in, how you affected people, even down to, like, you know, you're buying something at the store, and how you treat the cashier, it all matters. It really matters. We don't realize at the time, but when, you know, it all will come back in the end. And, you know, if someone's nasty to you, always remember that they're going to have to face that. When they cross over, they will see, they'll be shown some things that they wouldn't even expect they were going to be shown. They'll be shown. And because it's all about making amends, you know, in the end. But, oh, also, I wanted to mention that I'm on Facebook. If anybody wants to visit me there, I'm there. Jennifer Avalon.
Great.
Yeah. And, yeah, so it's all good, as they say.
I really...
not to worry, as they say. Your mother, I was going to say, is British, right? So you know those things. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Indeed. Well, I think that is such a special message that you are giving us. And I wonder, you know, I have this little message came to me some many, many years ago, and it went something like, if you really want a perspective, you know, of a meaningful perspective of what's going on around you, then you go talk to the quiet one in the corner. Because it's the quiet ones are listening. The quiet ones are observing. And so the quiet ones have a more full, potentially meaningful perspective. You know? And I really took that to heart. And I think it sort of gave me it helped me develop an eye for the quiet ones, you know?
I think there's a lot of truth. There's a lot of truth to that.
And you're a living example. You know, you're off in your little world, but you're paying attention and you care, you know?
Well, thank you. Yeah, I do care. Well, you care too. You care too, Jamila. You wouldn't be doing this, what you're doing.
Oh, no, I wouldn't even be here. No, it's more fun to care. I mean, it's more vulnerable, you know, and... This is one of the cool things about, you know, going past the 40 chronological years, I have to say that, you know, I mean, learning all that giving and receiving and, you know, just at a certain point, vulnerability becomes just a lot more comfortable than having a closed up heart.
Yes, I agree with you. I'm over 42, so I know what you're talking about.
Isn't it great?
It is. So don't worry, girls. Don't worry, young girls.
Yeah, our young boys.
Right, our young boys.
Humans, yes.
There's a lot to look forward to.
It gets better, doesn't it?
Like a fine wine.
That's fantastic. Well, share with us again your website.
It's jenniferavalon.net.
Okay. And to find you on Facebook, they can go to the Facebook and put in a search for Jennifer Avalon?
Yes.
Okay, great. And would you like to offer, we have about 5 minutes, and so we're doing great. I guess the one thing about your experience in the NDE and with the extraterrestrial beings, I think I feel especially passionate about because of what you mentioned in the brevity of the focus in the media being to make the extraterrestrial beings negative and scary. And I really appreciate that you brought for us, even though your encounter was brief and still poignant, it was enough. It was so clear that these beings had no harm in their intention.
Yeah. Oh, no harm. And in fact, I've had some others. That was my first experience. I actually did have another one, but it was different. Mm-hmm. It was also very positive, and it involved the smaller ones. You know, the little there's tall ones from what I can tell, and then there's like the smaller ones. They're almost like children.
Oh, really?
And again, not scary at all. They came around my house where I live now, and I didn't actually get to see them, but they were running along the side. It was the middle of the night, and then they came. They can go through fences. You know, they can go through, you know, I don't know how they do it, but they go through walls. And they were in my backyard, and they were scratching I have like screens, and there must have been a bunch of them because they were all scratching the screens at once. And I remember I got out of bed, and I just went and put my hand on the window, you know, and on the screen. And I just felt, I was very happy they were there, very relieved. They felt like they were children. And they were just, I felt they were like checking on me or something. So again, I wasn't afraid. In fact, I was actually happy that I hadn't heard from them in a long time. You know, I hadn't been contacted in a long time, so I was glad. But that was it. Then I heard a gun, one of my neighbors, I heard a shotgun. So they must have seen something that scared them. And they haven't come back since.
Well, all the more reason to have this conversation over and over, you know, because the fear is really the challenge, I think.
They're the last people they're the last beings that should be shot at.
Very interesting. Do you in your communication with spirit guides or angelic beings, did you have dreams? Are you a meditator?
Yes, I do meditate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then, so you are able to maintain communion on those levels, or is it just another?
Well, automatic mm-hmm. writing, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That also, yeah. Yeah. So it's just part of the whole thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Part of having been over there. Like, there's some kind of hookup or something that happens, I guess. So, but it's all, you know, it's all a positive, and that's the best thing I can say. And anything that isn't, if somebody encounters someone who is, I won't say negative, but is using some kind of gift in a way to harm people, then it is not from the universe that I visited, you know, where I went. It's not from there. And that's important to know, because, you know, the dark side has power too. So, you know, it's important to know, you know, anything that's out to hurt people is not from the light, as you would say. It's not from the light.
So, right.
Yeah.
And, yeah, Mom used to say, if it doesn't come from love, it isn't real.
Ah, okay, that's good. I would agree with that. Very, very good. Yep.
It helps, because discerning is a really important part, especially after you go through a near-death experience, or if you're just a very sensitive, spiritually aware person, then you pick up these energies, which is really special that you're coming forward with your story, because as you know, when you mentioned the NDEers or survivors, and you know, our cultures come through a really difficult passage that I like to say is passing now, as we become more open to the conversation of the other dimensional realities, whatever you call them, you know. But you guys, the generations, my mother, you guys are all the pioneers that kept the conversation alive through some very, very dark times. And I feel like our young people are even that much more spiritually aware, that much more sensitive, and they might not need to have an NDE. They're just here and they're already alive on those levels. So your story is really important so that they feel a place here. You know, that's what we're supposed to do, right? To help our young ones coming in and all that.
That's right. You pass the baton always.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It's good to talk to you, you know? Like, hello?
Hi, I'm there.
Oh, okay.
It's nice to chat with you, too. Sorry, I got a little distracted.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay.
All right. So we are going to wrap it up now, and I want to offer you a closing comments in the next few minutes.
Oh, okay.
Is there a special message or a gift or something that you feel like you would like to share? And again, please share with us your website.
Okay, the website is jenniferavalon.net. And I guess my closing comment would just be, just life is a gift. Don't, you know, it's don't let things get to you too much. It all turns out in the end, you know, and enjoy life. It's really important to enjoy life. There's a lot out there, you know, that's good. And find the things that are good and enjoy your life and love others. Let their love into to you, and it's all going to turn out. It's all going to turn out fine.
Hmm. Wow. Well, thank you so much, Jennifer, for joining us, for taking a break from the hermitage and
from the hermitage. Yes, live from the hermitage.
Yay! It's nice to know there's a ball of light there on the East Coast, keeping things in balance there. Yeah, I'm sure you're doing more than you realize. Absolutely.
Thanks.
Well, yeah, thank you so much for being with us. And well, now if we're all ready, we can put on our wings and flap, flap, flap and fly across the country. And so you're welcome to stay on with us for just a minute if you like, Jennifer, while we welcome Anna Kate, and then we can say a gentle farewell to you at the same time. And we'll bridge the coasts now, and we're landing in Washington State to welcome.
Right.
Yes, Anna Kate, hello.
Hello, welcome to Seattle.
Thank you.
Hi, Anna Kate.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Jennifer. She's been with us for the last hour.
Right. So good to hear your music.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Such a gift.
I wish you all a fine time. And, okay.
And thank you, Jennifer.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Okay,
I love your name. Anna. I think that name Anna Kate is beautiful, isn't it? Anna Kate.
Thank you.
I love that.
Lovely. Wow.
Sounds like a poem in itself.
Mm. Yay,
all
Jennifer.
Right, girls. Talk to you later. Thank you.
You're welcome, and thank you, Jennifer. We'll be in touch. Big hug.
Okay. Blessings. Bye-bye, sweetie. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hello, Anna Kate. How are you?
Great. How are you?
We're doing good. We've been warming up here with all of our music talk and bringing us now to the east, to the west coast here. You are another end of the spectrum. You are an artist that is celebrating the release of your debut EP, correct? The self-titled Anna Kate.
Yes. Very exciting.
That is fantastic. Well, please, will you introduce yourself a little bit to our listeners? You are a harpist and a vocalist and a writer. And please, share with us a little bit about your experience, how you came to choose the harp might be a fun one. That's such a beautiful instrument. And introduce us to yourself a little bit.
Sure. So I guess I'll start with the roots. I grew up in Wenatchee, Washington. A small town in the middle of Washington State, And I was there until I was 18. And when I was little, I loved music. And I went to a harp concert when I was 5 years old. And I just fell in love with the instrument. I thought it was so beautiful. The tone was so pretty. And I was like a broken record. I just kept saying, I want to play the harp. I want to play the harp. Hmm. And I started on piano when I was in second grade and eventually found a harp teacher in my small town who was fantastic. And I started lessons with her when I was 10 years old. Fast forward a little bit, and now I've just released my first EP of 6 songs.
Well, that is fantastic. And the harp is, are there different kinds of harps? When you say harp, the harp I'm most familiar with is the very, very large one. And then I've seen smaller ones, but I've never seen a really small one. Are they all pretty large?
That's a great question. There's kind of a divide between the pedal harp and the folk harp. And I have a concert grand pedal harp, and there are 7 pedals, and that's how you get the accidental notes, you know, the black keys on the piano.
Oh.
Or sharp symbats. But a folk harp has levers on it, and it actually started on a lever harp called the Troubadour harp. That was my first harp, and it's much smaller and more affordable. If anyone out there is thinking of starting harp, it's a very affordable option, and to get the sharps and the flats, you use your hands to flip the levers up. And it's interesting because the man who invented the Troubadour harp is actually, he was a very good friend of my grandfather's before he passed away. So it's kind of a cool part of my family's heritage that they knew him.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Small world, no accidents, of course. And you continue to play the harp as your main instrument, and did you always sing and write as well?
Now, the songwriting and the singing started when I was in college. My sophomore year, I started taking songwriting classes, and my brother dropped off his guitar at my apartment, and I ended up kind of adopting it and starting to write songs. I started on the harp a little bit and also guitar and piano, writing on all 3 instruments. But singing was kind of a stretch for me. I didn't really feel that I was naturally a singer, but, you know, you only have one voice. It's not like you can just go out and buy a new instrument. You have one voice to work with, and you really have to learn to work with what you have and appreciate what you have and what your ability is there. And that's kind of how I came to terms with having a softer, breathy voice and making it work with the kind of music I wanted to write.
Ah, so was that a bit harder for you, or you just had to apply yourself like you did with the harp?
I would say it was more challenging becoming a singer. Learning an instrument was much easier for me personally, but everyone's different.
Do you actually sing and play the harp at the same time?
That's right.
That's amazing. I think that's amazing.
The trickiest part is getting the microphone in just the right spot. Once it's there, it's a little bit easier, but sometimes blocks the view of the string a little bit.
Because it's pretty tall, the harp.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. I need to get a roadie to help me move it around.
Oh, really? How heavy is it?
It's about 80 pounds.
Whoa, that's a small
six
person.
6 feet tall.
Oh, wow. You need a good size vehicle to carry that.
This is true.
Wow. Well, are you looking at touring and things with this EP, or have you gotten that far yet?
Right now, I am just performing locally in the Northwest. Mm-hmm. I have a show in Seattle November 6th at the Fremont Abbey, and then I'm looking to book in Portland and Bellingham. And I'd like to go to my hometown in Wenatchee.
All right, so you're making a gentle entry and just see where it takes you.
Exactly.
And share with us a bit, if you'd like, about the, as you put the shifting from your classical training to how you brought your sound into the pop indie, the modern musics.
Sure. It was not an easy shift. It was something, on classical harp, you learn to play a lot of rolled chords, a lot of arpeggios, a lot of glissandos, and it doesn't really lend itself well to a rhythmic drive, which is what you need to be appropriate for pop or indie rock. So it wasn't until I moved back to Seattle, I had my own place, I had the freedom to be loud and just be really creative and not have anyone listening in to the creative process. I had that space so I could start experimenting more with my sound on the harp. And then suddenly I left my guitar at a relative's house for a while. I was without my guitar. So my only option was to write on the harp at that time. And so, like I said, I needed to find a way to create a rhythmic drive in my song on the harp, which I had been trained classically for. Rolled chords, arpeggios, just wasn't creating enough rhythm. And so the sound that I came up with has a lot of repeated notes, which you usually don't hear on the harp, a lot of different ways of repeating. Sometimes I would just repeat quickly between the right hand and the left hand to make a rhythmic drive. Sometimes I would add a beat or take out a beat or change meters, change tempos, add accents, all of those things to create the rhythmic drive needed for pop or for indie rock.
And you taught yourself that?
Exactly.
My
trade secrets, I'm giving them away.
Yay, you're helping the next generation already, and
right.
You're just getting started. Well, shall we take this opportunity to offer a song so that people can be introduced to your lovely sound?
Please do.
All right. Well, I think that it would be really fun to start with This Old Radio. This is a song that would you like to share with us a little bit about the song?
Sure. This Old Radio I wrote recently in Seattle, and it's kind of a free spirit of a song. Every time I sat down to write a little bit more of it, the song would just meander into a new direction. And I just kind of let it go and let it meander. And I didn't try to fit it into any particular form. And when I took it to my producer, Nathan Yacino, who I was hiring to do the EP, he really understood that. And he let the song just be a free spirit. And he really worked hard to capture the nuances in the recording.
And so this was a song that allowed a very free flow of the harp and all the instruments, correct?
Correct, exactly.
All right. So we will offer this now, This Old Radio from Anna Kate.
Stay alone. Names don't hear your name.
That's really lovely.
Thank you.
And the harp really isn't lost, you know? That's really quite special, because the harp somehow is still very much a part of the song, but I understood more the rhythmic drive that you were talking about, listening to that, and
good.
How the production around it really had to balance each other, but it was definitely not lost. That's really special.
Thank you. Listening to it again there reminded me of being in the studio. This was the first song that we recorded, my producer and I, for this EP, and it was so exciting for me to be in that creative environment and do the different tracks for the instruments. And I mean, not to be prideful at all, but I learned that I could write different new parts on the fly, and it was very rewarding and empowering to see that on this creative project I learned something new about my abilities. And I would just encourage others that, you know, if they're following their dreams and being creative, they're going to unlock new talents of their own.
That's really a great message. Share a little bit more about how the muse works with you and you're pursuing the dreams. And did you write? Was this a long time goal of yours that you finally just said, now I'm going to do it? Or how did that happen?
Well, I think that as a songwriter, you always kind of picture, someday people are going to hear my song here that I've written, and you picture it in the end form, and you picture it being great. But it takes a lot of work to get there. One of the things that I needed to find was a producer that had the right fit for my style. So that really took a while to find someone. I had met with other producers that I thought of hiring. It took a while to find the right fit, and that was a little bit of the reason I didn't just start the day after I wrote a song to go to the recording studio. You know, I have to find the right people to collaborate with.
And then as the collaboration evolved, did that inspire more writing, or did you have several songs that were ready to, you know, or close to ready? And was it circular for you, things just kind of moving in their times and then all coming into place, or was it very linear?
Well, I did have a collection of songs that I had before the whole recording process started, and we inventoried them, which that's what you do when you have a producer. You sit down with them and you inventory which songs you both feel interested in, and we found 6, 7, 8 ideas for that, and that was a big relief. Because I have ideas coming at me all the time, and to be able to focus and just, this is my collection that I'm focusing on finishing, was very, it was just such a relief. And I'll add that having someone telling you the songs are awesome and they're going to be awesome helped me to finish.
So you chose a loving, supportive, coaching producer.
Yeah, I would say so.
That's really important to know
it
what your style
is. It is important for the creative crowd to have people that are encouraging in that way. And it wasn't just the producer. Anyone that I would run a song past, they were so encouraging and patient. And they listened to my ideas, and that's such an important part of the creative process.
I think that deserves special note. I think we don't realize how much we give to each other every day, just taking a pause, you know, and listening to each other. And, you know, that can make the whole project completely take its form. And
exactly.
I don't think we realize that so fully oftentimes, you know.
We're also really feed each other's ideas. up and rolling.
And when this production, how many performers are on this? As I hear a few different instruments. Are they all you in different tracks, or?
It's primarily the producer, Nathan Ucino, myself, and Phil A. Peterson on string. Originally, when I asked about the budget, I was quoted an amount that included quite a few musicians, and I went back to the producer and I said, I can't afford this. I'm sorry. I guess I'll have to go somewhere else. And he said, he came back and said, no, between you and me, we can really cover most of this and we can do it within your budget. And that's what we did. We made it work. Nathan Ucino plays so much. He does drums, he does keyboard, bass guitar, acoustic guitar. I did harp and piano, sometimes guitar. We brought in Phil A. Peterson on the cello, and that was the majority of the collection.
That's really neat. So you made several references to the budget and to the, you know, the nuts and bolts of that. So am I correct to assume that you kept your day job, so to speak, so you were building up to this?
Right. I work full time, and this is something I do in my spare time.
So you're a hard worker.
Try to be. It was an interesting juxtaposition, though, when I would leave my day job to go to a studio session at night, and the contrast was so strong because at work there's a lot of structure, and then in the studio it's like this oasis, this creative hands-on environment where it's a total opposite. And having both elements in my life at the same time was really fun, I have to admit.
And do you maintain that on some level, or is that just a particular time for production, or is that somehow you've managed to keep that going, or was that part of the life even before that?
Having the creative evenings, and yeah, I guess that's a good point. I've tried to be, aware of how much time I can put into creative efforts in my free time after work, and I think it was just more enhanced during the time that I had booked studio time for this EP. It was even more of a part of my life during that.
How long did it take you?
You know, we were on and off with the project due to a lot of different things, but it spanned over a year and a half. So there were times that one of us was out of town or out of the country. So it wasn't like day in, day out, year and a half. It was on and off, year and a half from start to finish.
Oh, okay. And then it was just released, it was in September?
September 25th was the release.
That's very, very recent. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Just have to say that one more time, because that is an awesome thing to finally have completed it, and now you are sharing it. And do you have particular ways that people can find your music? Please, now's a good time. Let's tell people about your website, where they can find out about your gigs coming up, and where they could check out your music.
Sure. My website is best place to find all that, and it's just annakatemusic.com, and Kate is spelled with a C, so it's annakatemusic.com.
Great.
And that has upcoming shows, it has a little journal site, it has my video, music video, it has links to iTunes, where I'm selling my CD, Amazon. You can get a physical CD through the site. And there's a free download of my song Daydreaming. And that's available on my website, annakmusic.com.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. And when you're doing this, I'm very interested in exploring the creative process. I feel like when we are in our creativity, there's some connection to soul. There's some connection to this place where the near-death experiencers often talk about, where we're all connected, where we're all one. And somehow when we're in our creativity, we somehow access that without even knowing it. It in my experience, and I think that has something to do with what makes us so high, like that. There's just such a rush about, wow, when you're in your horse and you're really there where your soul wants you to be, you know. And I think this is a great challenge for so many of us, where we want to be on that horse, and then, you know, it seems to get away from us so often. And I wonder if you could share with us a little bit about that process for you, and how you feel your connection there.
Right, within the creative process.
Yeah.
When you have those epic moments where nothing else is on your mind and you just have this high, definitely. I feel that all the time when I'm writing my music. It's such a rush to write a new song and to dream of what it might become. I think that most of my songs, most of my creative ideas come when I'm just playing around on an instrument, a guitar part or a piano part or a harp part. And it's interesting because I'll be in a certain mood, and then I'll play something on an instrument that reflects that same mood, and I'll kind of weave a song around that idea, that concept. And I feel like when people hear that song later, that mood translates in a way that not many art forms can translate as clearly. So again, when I'm creating, I'll come to an idea on an instrument that reflects and captures the mood I'm in, and then I'll make a song out of it, and then that mood is shared with other people. They can feel that same mood when they're listening to it. And I think it's something a little bit beyond me, how music works like that. You know, do you have any ideas how music can speak to us and bring out moods? It's something that philosophers have talked about all throughout the ages, and it's a little bit of a mystery.
Well, I think it's a fantastic mystery in a lot of ways. I think the mystery itself is part of the magic. And if I were going to go science with it, I would say that it's a vibratory phenomena. That everything is a vibration. You know, we're not even solid bodies. Our whole body is a mass of vibratory coding that translates into this form. So the vibrations are really what we're constantly interacting with. That's a real techy, like, you know, spoil the magic kind of That's why you need the mystery, because if you just stop there, it's like, oh, well, great, I'm just a walking vibration and how. Right?
I think that'll always still be mysterious, even if you can define it somehow.
Yeah, somehow they work together. Somehow they do. But I think music is special for... Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say another way that I write creatively is not to start on an instrument, but to start with a lyric idea. Something that just comes across my mind. An idea, and then I'll build a song around that, and I'll build a melody around that, and harmony. People ask me all the time, which do you start with first, your music or your lyrics? And my answer is both. It depends. answer your question earlier about the creative process for me.
When you're writing a song, are you thinking about who you're singing it for, or does it about you? Maybe the answer might be both, but is it about you needing to express this feeling, needing to express this mood to get it out? And, or is it about, wow, this is coming to me, I really want to share this, this experience is really enhancing whatever, and I want to get this out, this message out. Is it, which one is it? Or is it both, or sometimes a mix, or?
Well, I think that it originally starts with me wanting to craft a song, kind of like a sculptor and a marble, a piece of marble they're trying to sculpt this form out of. Kind of like that. But then once I feel like I'm onto something, there's such a natural desire to share that with other people. And usually it's not for any specific audience, to be honest. More so just the innate desire to share your art.
And when you are, do you paint or have another medium as well, or is it just music for you?
You know, I've never really tried visual art, but maybe someday. It's never too late to start.
Well, say that you just had time suddenly and your whole life was just the studio. And then what would you be? Did you have you ever played with that in your mind?
I love that idea. Like a dream. So you're asking what I would do with my time if I just had all day in a studio?
Yeah.
In a music studio?
Any studio. What would, yeah.
That would be really refreshing because I, like I said earlier, I have ideas coming at me all the time, and I would love to make something of all these ideas and focus on the different directions that I'd like to try with my music. This EP is a first step. It's an example of my music that is a combination of singer, songwriter, and harpist styles. And that's definitely not the only step that I have in mind. And if I had all day, all the time in a studio, I'd want to keep experimenting with my direction.
What are some of the directions that you're contemplating? What is some of the visioning that you're exploring?
I would say I have more of a folk collection as well that I would like to experiment with. And to be honest, I would love more collaboration. There are some really cool bands out there that have a great sound. And I have a solo sound that would be great to collaborate with other people on. And that's definitely something in the back of my mind that I think about as an additional step that maybe someday I could take.
So in your vision, you very much would like to team up with other musicians and explore not just becoming Anna Kate, the world traveler songster, but the part of a band, another sound, another expression of the music in tandem with other gifted musicians, something like that.
Right. I think that is a great possibility, and it looks a lot more fun, to be honest, up on stage when you have a band. So I love doing solo work too, but I think writing with other people that bring in new talents would be ideal. It would be so great. But I think bringing the harp into the indie rock and the pop harp direction that I'm going, I think it's important, and I think I'd like to see more people try it. I don't want to be the only one. I want to inspire people to bring the harp into the singer-songwriter world.
Well, I think that is a fantastic idea. And that is really great that you've taken that on. And maybe this is a good segue for offering another song to inspire those dreamers to say, you can do this with the harp.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so which song should we offer at this point that offers the most, what one would you suggest offers the fullest harp experience in this capacity that you're seeing it come in?
Let's listen to Daydreaming. The intro has guitar and harp together, and it's just really pretty.
Okay, and this is also the one that people can find on your website, annakatemusic.com. So here we go. Now we're going to listen to Daydreaming.
My face is cold against the glass.
Here. That is really beautiful. Your voice and the harp are such a nice complement for each other.
Thank you.
And there is definitely a place for the harp. I love this time we're in where it's a really pleasant example, I think, of how old structures are being rewritten, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. Share a little bit about the classical model and how that worked for you as you were learning the harp. And did your spirit rebel even then?
That's a good question. I'm trying to remember. I love classical music. There's a place in my heart for it, definitely. But I wanted to be part of something a little bit more modern, a modern art form. And my teachers could see that. I don't think they were used to that, but I had teachers that were supportive of me being a little bit of a free spirit, and they would look for ways to let me compose new parts for old songs or to enter contests to write music. I mean, I was a composer ever since I could figure out how to push record on a little tape player. I was making these little recordings all the time as a kid. And I think they could see that, and they recognized that I was good at the classical style, but I also had other ideas and other ambitions, and they did what they could to encourage me on those.
Well, that is a really great story, because that is a very positive example again of how we influence each other in our creative process, and you know, the power of just one or two people noticing and saying, hey, yeah, why don't you try rewriting this song in that way, you know, and giving you space to go the direction you were obviously going, you know. That's really special. That's a nice gift to have been brought into. And it seems that you're very much in line with a lot of things that I feel very positive in the direction of humanity. In my perspective, I'm just not going to give up on the human. You know, I really know that we can live and co-create a loving world where we actually respect each other in all life as a rule, and not even one that needs to be contemplated, that we can carry on from this learning experience we've had in these millennia of less loving and experience. And what I'm finding from you and your example of your music is in your consistency in the connection with other people, and how that materializes in enhancing your gift, which also enhances the gift that you give back. I just find that a very inspiring example for us all, even at this stage. I just want to offer that. And
I appreciate what you are trying to do. That is so great. And yes, it is a good example. My music does come about from the people that support me and the people that have connected with me and have encouraged me. It's not something I could have done alone. And what you're saying is true.
That is so special. And, you know, I think that is dispelling one of those sort of implied things when we look at Hollywood and all these things. Like, you look at some of these big names out there, and it's never really fully acknowledged that so many people go into the creation of an amazing song or an amazing show of some sort. And it is so true. It is absolutely the bottom line that none of us get anywhere by ourselves. Period.
Exactly.
Plus, it's just a whole lot more fun to be with other people.
Exactly what I'm trying to say.
Oh, man. That is fantastic. Well, Anna Kate, we are really blessed that you have come forward now at this time and are bringing us your songs. And I want to please share with us again what your you have a gig coming up in Seattle, and do you have any others?
You know, I'm working on creating a schedule, so the best thing to do would be to check my website again, annakatemusic.com. Kate is spelled with a C, and I'm in the process of putting out new performance schedules all the time, and it's really an exciting time of follow-through on my EP release. So definitely check my website.
Well, talk to us a little bit about follow-through in completion. This is very important. Share with us That's just if you want little steps about that.
So for me, I picture it like this. If I were to go golfing and I were to hit the golf ball and not have any follow through and the club would just not go anywhere after hitting the ball just would not go very far. But if you have follow through on your swing, that's what gets the ball somewhere where you want it to go, far. And then you go to the next move, you go to where your ball is and you hit it again, and you follow through again. And then you go to the next place where your ball is, and you hit the ball, and you have follow through. And I think for each major milestone in a creative process, you have to remember the follow through steps before you go on to the next portion or the next chapter of what you're doing. And for me right now, that follow through is working on spreading the word about my EP and performing.
That is great. And when you perform, it's you and your harp, and an occasional musician might join you, or is it you and your harp?
Right now, I have arranged all of my songs on the EP so that they could be played solo or with the group. So it's flexible. I could just show up with my harp, or I could show up with a drummer and the harp. But they've been arranged, so they sound great either way.
Nice. That was good planning. And did you do all that with the skills you developed in your classical training, you know, writing music and all that? Were you able to translate it to that level as well?
Exactly. That was a huge help, having training in music theory.
Yeah, that is the time that I've heard many musicians speak over and over. When you want to share your music and bring in groups, that is a very helpful thing. I mean, there are talented musicians as well who can play by ear, but to have composed it on that level, it can just really expedite things. I've heard that over and over for those who can read the music, that is too, but that's another conversation, right? But
Yeah, you hit on some good points. You definitely need to have the follow through and the musical background, the theory, the skeleton of what you're trying to do. And back to the idea of follow through, I think that's important. So many of us creative people just have a hard time with getting from point A to point B and landing on point B, you know? And I think that you just have to realize that you're passionate about what you're doing and use that to propel you as you inch through the details. That's what I found.
I think that's a great analogy to the golf game, because it's very simple, and that big swing is such a great metaphor for just getting in the water. We're just starting, and then you have to go and follow the ball, and you have to, you know, guide the ball, and sometimes you lose the ball, and you have to start again, and I think that you made that's a very useful analogy, because it's very accessible. And it's also big. You know, golf courses tend to be very big. So your dreams aren't small, right?
You understatement, must, you know.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And following through and completion, they're such gems in your heart when you can look back and go, wow, I did that. You know, it's complete now. And what a good feeling. What a good feeling. Well, I'm so excited for you. And I'm so excited that this is a birthing time for your music, and also that you are bringing such a community centered focus in your music. I find that so incredibly refreshing, and it's such a pleasure, really, on a whole nother level I didn't even conceive or, you know, contemplate. Because, you know, the singer-songwriter thing, it's got this sort of well-earned reputation of a lot, you know, being very self-absorbed. You know, you have to get your thing out. But you're bringing a freshness in your maturity and your understanding of the fact that we're all in this together, and we're, you know, the idea of bringing the group energy into it from the beginning is very inspiring, very refreshing to me. So I want to thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you for noticing that about me. I think you have definitely a gift for figuring people out and seeing the positive in them.
Well, that's why we're all in this together, my dear. We absolutely are all in this together. And it's fun. Bless your heart.
To connect.
I'm sorry?
It's definitely fun to connect and to have those times where we figure out how people have helped us along to get to where we are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we're getting down to the last few minutes in our show, and I'll segue from there, which is to the gratitude that I find so natural at this point, where you realize, wow, we've made it, and thank you. You know, thank you, Anna Kate, for joining us, and Jennifer Avalon. Thank you, BBS Radio, and Doug and Dawn in the back, and thank you to all the good people that have been tremendous and loving and supportive of this whole endeavor and my whole life, you know, and all that are and will be in your life, and for all the ancestors that have gone before us, and for all the spirit beings that have joined us. I want to acknowledge a huge, hearty, warm thank you for making this all possible. And I would like to pass this last few minutes to you to offer your final thoughts. Again, tell us your website, and we will wrap it up.
Okay, well, thank you so much. I'm very grateful that you had me as a guest today and that you learned more about what I'm trying to do, and that is bring heart into my singer-songwriter style and to share that with other people and not just keep it in my living room, but to have my collection of songs enter other people, their lives. And my website is where you can find all the details. It's AnnaKateMusic.com. I spell my name with a C. It's Anna Kate. And there's a free download of Daydreaming that we listened to today. And I would just encourage people who are daydreaming right now about some dream that they have to remember the people that are around them that can help them and support them in their dreams and help them to be a light to others.
Hmm. Thank you. And this is Anna Kate, spelled AnnaKateMusic.com, AnnaKateMusic.com. Do you have a Facebook page that you are active on?
Yes, I'm on Facebook under Anna Kate. You can add me as a friend or find my artist page.
Okay. And so that's another way to stay connected and learn more about you and your upcoming events. All right.
Fantastic.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you again.
Yeah.
Okay. Yay. All right, then. So we are wrapping up this week's Alchemy of Light broadcast. What a pleasure. This show has been such a rush. Thank you so much again. And I am Jameel Graham, your host, and we are signing off now. Please do take good care of yourselves. Take good care of each other. And we will return in a fortnight. And until then, Bye-bye.